So, first the, what did they say? First the carriage, then the horse. There's a way. You know, first the shoe, then the shoestrings. There's some way of things. It's not just any way you like it. First unzip the coat before you can put it on. There's a way of things. So spiritually, that's materially. Even spiritually, it's even more important. There's a subjective way of things. The Lord did not come here to please our senses. He did not come here to serve us. He came here to give an opportunity for us to serve Him. Service first. Surrender is necessary. Service without surrender is actually not service. It's something we call preliminary practice, but it's not the real thing. There must be surrender, then there can be service. So they knew it, that before the Sankirtan movement of Mahaprabhu can spread all over the world, the place of his appearance must be manifest again in this world. And it, along with it being manifest, there must be a great temple must be built there. And then from this, then the potency will go and spread all over the world. Now, some people are of the opinion that first the Sankirtan will spread all over the world, and after it spreads all over the world, then all the foreigners will come to India and build that wonderful temple. So there's some confusion is there. But what Nityananda Prabhu says, he says, a great temple, it's called an Adbhut Mandir, means a wonderful, beautiful temple, will be built at the birth site of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And from that temple, then it will go all over the world. So Bhaktivinoda and Bhaktisiddhanta, not being conditioned souls, not being from the Judeo-Christian background, not being foreigners, and not being egotistical in so many things, they knew that first the order of the Lord must be served. The order of God must be served first, according to His direction, what He wants. And then accordingly, the Sankirtan will be successful. So that was their primary work. But they didn't even know where to begin, in one sense, because it was all hidden. They knew a vague location. But there's a saying in the English language, look and you will find. Seek and ye shall find. It's an old saying. You try. It means you try. God is there to help you. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I preserve what you have and I carry what you lack. And when the need is there, I will be there to help you. So with this fundamental understanding, they searched and they looked in various ways in trying to locate where this is. There was, of course, a place. People were saying, why look? It's here. Huh? When going to that place, it's in the greater Navadvip Dham, but Bhaktivinoda did not feel confident that this is actually Mahaprabhu's birthplace. There were several reasons for that, but he did not feel confident. Even his mantra guru said, this is the place. And he did not feel confident with that, because that mantra guru of Bhaktivinoda was not a liberated soul. And he was with a group of much less than liberated souls. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur continued to search. And first he looked through the available sacred text books. And the first thing that they ascertained was that Navadvip, the ancient town of Navadvip, is on the eastern side of the Ganges, not on the western side. And according to what they could see, because you can understand, if a river was somewhere yesterday, it's sure. Right now, if water did not flow in the Kaveri for 200 years, you would be able to see without any difficulty whatsoever where the Kaveri used to go. That river bed would not disappear in 100 or 200 years. It takes a long, long time before a riverbed disappears. So on the other side of Navadvip, they could find nothing to indicate that the Ganges was there. They found only to indicate the Ganges is this side, somewhere, this side. Of course, it was here. But, see, this is east, this is west. Navadvip is here. It's on the wrong side. So Navadvip was on this side. So that means the Ganges would have to come this side. But they found no possibility that the river could come on this side. So they knew it must be here. So first, through textbooks, that are written, and that means scriptural books that mention Navadvipa and its location and so forth. But ultimately, it came down to divine revelation. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had a vision, as we say. He caught a glimpse of the eternal Navadvipa in a particular direction, which caught his attention. And he saw this on more than one occasion from his rooftop. He would look out towards what he thought was the area of the eternal Navadvipa, the place of Mahaprabhu's pastimes, which was all rice fields and a couple of Mohammedan villages. No Hindu village was even there in that area. And one day in the early morning while chanting his japa, he got a glimpse, a divine glimpse of the eternal Vaikuntha Navadvipa, the Swetha Dweep of Navadvipa. And I believe this occurred on more than one occasion. And then he went in that direction with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in search of what may be lying there, and again, mostly rice fields. But on one day, while searching the area, they came to this place near to a village. Some land was there, owned by a Mohammedan, and there was a natural tulsi garden was being maintained there. Well, the Mohammedans don't really care much about tulsi. But this Mohammedan, for some unknown reason, he was maintaining a tulsi garden. And when they entered that area, the Tulsi Garden, then Bhaktivinoda could feel the presence of his own homeland, so to speak. Sometimes you're looking for something and you go in a store and you say, this is not the place. And then you come in, this is it. There's some feeling comes to you, some knowing. We are not feelingless creatures. Actually, feeling is your best way of knowing, ultimately. In the last issue, feeling is the most important instrument. In the beginning, you have to hear, but ultimately, you have to feel truth in your own heart and know it by such. Not because I said so, because somebody else said so. It has to come by revelation, by feeling, by realization. So when he entered that garden, he felt, this is a divine place. This is a divine place. And he held that place in suspicion, this may be the place of Mahaprabhu's birth. So at that time, during those times, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had come to know Jagannath Das Babaji as his Shikshu Guru, and really as his Sadguru. It is called Sadguru, really fully his guru. And this other fellow, who was more or less a social icon of the guru establishment, Bhaktivinoda always gave a formal respect, but his heart was at one with Jagannath Das Babaji. And Jagannath Das Babaji was Paramahansa, liberated soul also. So, the way of the Vaishnavas is not without confirmation. You think something, you know something, you don't get your head as big as a horse or an elephant and think, yes, I know, no one can tell me. I have seen some successful preachers after getting 1,000 or 2,000 disciples, then they get this attitude, no one can tell me, I know what I'm doing. No one can tell me, I know what I'm doing. But that is never the way, really, of the Vaishnava. Even the greatest Vaishnava, he yearns for some confirmation, some association, someone even to talk to about those higher things, those important things. So Bhaktivinoda didn't think, I'm liberated soul, I know what I'm doing, no one can tell me. This is Mahaprabhu's place, said and done. He brought Jagannath Das Babaji there. Now, the story is that Jagannath Das Babaji was so old at that time, he generally never walked anywhere. He would be carried in a basket, which was a system, and of course, the Vaishnava community had arranged a servant, a good, strong man, who would carry him wherever he needed to go in a basket. He was something up over 110 years old or something like that at the time. So Bhaktivinoda arranged to bring Jagannath Das Babaji there, and who was also blind at the time, means not much use for looking through from the eyes anymore, although he did wear glasses, like Srila Sridhar Maharaj. He wore glasses, but with or without, it was the same thing. In his old age, he couldn't see. So when Bhaktivinoda wanted to bring Jagannath Das Babaji there to see if, Babaji had any experience there, of note. Well, he certainly did. When he got there, before the man could even set down the basket, Jagannath, who was blind, who didn't even know where he was, jumped out of the basket. And when he landed on the ground, he started dancing and performing kirtan. And he was at an age where he couldn't even walk, or to speak of jump out of a basket. And he couldn't see where he was. As far as he knows, he could have been anywhere. But with the internal eye of devotion, he could understand that he was in the Yogapeeth. He had been brought to the epicenter of Chaitanya Leela. So that must have been a more than ecstatic moment for the few blessed souls that were there at that time. So then, based on Jagannath's experience, then Bhaktivinoda, he took the resolve, this is Yogapeeth. Then he set out to prove it through other historical, archaeological evidences, literary evidences, notations and here and there, and all around from every possible way, he proved this is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But without any of the evidences, he knew it is so because of the experience of Jagannath Das Babaji, what he manifested there. You follow? That is what we do. I don't know if I'm the spirit soul or not. I don't know if Krishna is God or not. I don't know. But my guru knows. My guru knows. And that's good enough for me. And then I know it's true. And then I can argue and put scripture and make defense and show archaeology and everything to prove that. But if I didn't know from the point, sure, it is sure, then how would I know? I wouldn't know. That's the way of Vaishnavism. You don't know. Your guru knows. And based on that, you know. Some people recently, in the last few years, they said guru knows everything. He knows if someone's snatching money. He knows if someone is dying. He knows if someone ate too much sweet rice. He knows if someone's burning the sweet rice. He knows all these things. We thought, my God, you must be crazy. You know all these things. You can't even sit in a room with three people talking. You go, hey, shut up. Too many talks. We have seen Prabhupada in the same way. They're not in a room, everybody talking and just adjusting all of that. They want some peace and quiet themselves. Understand? But some people are saying, guru, he knows everything. He knows everything. And Prabhupada had said, yes, guru knows everything means Krishna. He knows Krishna. Krishna is everything. So he knows everything is Krishna. If Krishna reveals something, he may know that. If Krishna doesn't reveal that, how he will know that? So later on, some people said, well, he told you that because you weren't ready for the truth. But that gentleman doesn't know that we were so crazy that if Prabhupada told us to cut off your head, we would cut off your head. Whatever he said, that was the truth. You understand? We were young and very committed and very fanatical at the time. What to speak of explaining if he knew everything and he said, yes, I know everything, we would all have jumped and said, jai. No one would have said, well, no, wait a minute. Let's think. No one would have doubted it. Anybody would have doubted him, would have got him by the neck and just carried him out. The fact is, it's more difficult to understand what that means. Guru knows Krishna. Krishna is everything. Therefore, Guru knows everything. And Krishna reveals everything. Or what everything means, what is within his choice, as he wants. So, that was the point. So, because of Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda's commitment, resolve, yes, we have found the place of God. Now, for the ordinary people who don't have Guru Nishtha, Guru Bhakti, Guru Shraddha, okay, we have to convince them by different arguments because people will challenge your faith. Your pure faith won't hold up in court. You'll need evidence. And it went to court. It went to the court. And they sustained the birthplace of Mahaprabhu as Yogapeeth in the court. And finally, the governor of Bengal, who was the second most powerful man, and the third most powerful man in the world. First there was the king and queen of England, then there was the viceroy at Delhi, and then there was the governor of Bengal, the third most powerful man in the world, came to Mayapur, and there's a picture of him sitting in a chair, and there's a silver thing on the desk. Well, inside that silver canister is the hear ye proclamation that says that Yogapeeth and gives its location is the birthplace of Mahaprabhu. So he even went so far as to get the third most powerful person in the world to verify this. From who? So that the fools may not be misguided by the cheaters across the river who are claiming something. Mostly by boat, by train, by rickshaw, by foot. But by evening, you'll see a million people. If you were up on a tall temple, look, you'll see over a million people swarming the area. And in the morning when you wake up, they're all gone. They come and they go very quickly. I don't know what's happening over on the other side of the river, but at Mayapur and Yogipi, there are millions of people coming. Still, across the river, they're like some sound of a crow. They're making a crow sound. This is actually really place, really place. Their temple was built there. Interesting point to note. Their temple was built there. They built some temple. Call it wonderful even. They built a temple there long before Bhaktivinoda. But the prediction never came true. After they built their temple, the holy name of Krishna, Mahaprabhu's name, never spread all over the world. Then Bhaktivinoda and Bhaktisiddhanta, they built and inaugurated this temple at Yogapith. From there, Krishna consciousness has gone all over the world. You are hard-pressed to find a place in the world, even in the aboriginal cultures, or even in the isolated parts of the world, that you can go there and nobody heard of Krishna. I mean, it's, that there's not somebody that doesn't go, oh, Hare Krishna. I mean, that's been the case for many years, what to speak of now. I've gone to places in Africa, the Dark Continent, and thought, you're at the end of the world. You are at a place now where you're going to tell people about Krishna because nobody in this land ever heard about Krishna. And as soon as we stepped off the airplane, one man just looked at us and said, Hare Krishna. Already done. But there were a few million there that didn't know. But the point was, at that point, one did. But today, if you go there, that's 28 years later, I bet you more than one man there knows, or one woman knows, or one child knows. The point is, from Yogapith, the temple built by Bhaktivinoda and Bhaktisiddhanta, and then the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta are not to be excluded. But it starts there. From there, all of them came to join. They came to be the servants of Bhaktisiddhanta. From there, they were instructed what to do. They went out and did that. Principally among them, Srila Prabhupada. He came to the far, far distant western hemispheres with Krishna consciousness. And now many descendants of Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples and grand disciples, they can be found all over the world, from Siberia to South Africa, from New York to London. They're all over the place. So. And nobody from that other place is anywhere except on the internet complaining. They are nowhere and doing nothing to fulfill the prophecy that from Yogapith, the holy name will spread all over the world. So, Palena Priya Prichate. You judge the pudding by the taste. Huh? The rice might look good, but when you eat it, you'll know if it's cooked or not. You see? The proof is in the pudding, they say. It's different expressions. So anyone can say, and everyone's saying, but who actually did it? Who did it and who's still doing it? Those who have their connection with Navadvip Dham, Mayapur, Bhaktivinoda, and Bhaktisiddhanta, they're doing it. And the others are like the crows who come and sit in the tree and criticize everything beneath them. They just make critical statements. Or they say the dogs bark when the caravan passes. So many elephants are going on the road and the local dogs come out and make sound. But the elephants continue. And gradually the sound of the dogs just dies out. So these critics of Bhaktivinoda and Bhaktisiddhanta, they are no more than crows or barking dogs, actually. And unfortunately, they'll probably have to take that species of life in their next life. They'll probably have to become dog and crow and possibly even worse. I mean, it's one thing not to know about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's not to know about Krishna. Not to know about those great souls. It's one thing not to know. Understand? And it is a completely other thing that you know and you criticize it and you fight against it. Better to remain in ignorance for another million lifetimes and you just don't know. And you just live according to your karma. And then one day you will know the truth and you will act on that and you will go back to Godhead. But when you come in connection with the truth and then you criticize it and you fight against it and you try to trouble it. And we've even seen people at this ashram one and a half years ago, there were some people, they tried to give trouble. In their deep brains, they thought this ashram will be finished now. They had their story. And now they are drunkards. And they don't even believe in Krishna. Listen, those same people who are making all the honk, honk, honk. Giving up all designation of a Hindu, Vaishnava, not even considering themselves a Hindu. Or I am a drunkard Brahmin. And in the meantime, Krishna consciousness went on. The parade went on. The dogs barked. It is better to be an ignorant person in the rice field. You just don't know. You don't know you should come here. You don't know. You just don't know. So anything you do wrong at that point, well, okay. Some reaction, but not so bad. But you know. And then you fight against that truth. Then you categorize as the most unfortunate creatures in the universe. It's sad. But it happens. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission now in 500 years has had different high points and down points. But here we are 518 years later. And the holy name of Krishna is out there on every continent. It's just out there in every major city and town and practically right down to farm village in the world. It's out there. But there's always somebody that doesn't know yet. You see, there's somebody living in India. I have seen amongst the young people, particularly young people, not just the young, but particularly the young, living in India, and it's just like, I wonder how they got born in India. Why they even got born here? They should have been born in Brooklyn, New York or something. But, and they're born in a certain environment, modern halls, modern this, and I doubt if some of them even know who Ganesh is. In the Hindu family, and probably don't even know Ganesh, what to speak of Krishna, what to speak of Mahaprabhu. But they are born within a day's train ride of the holy land of Navadvipa, more or less. Or within an hour or 2 hour flight. They're so close, but yet they are so far away. So to preach Krishna consciousness and Mahaprabhu's mission, one doesn't have to go to the other side of the world. There are plenty of people just within a few hundred meters of this gate who still do not know the importance of their life, how to perfect their life, what is Krishna, what is devotion, what is the holy name of Krishna, what is the grace of Mahaprabhu, within a few hundred meters of this ashram. And even amongst us, how clearly do we understand that? Ourselves also. So we don't have to go all anywhere and everywhere in the world to preach. You can do that right here in the ashram. You can do that right here in the village or right here in your own state, you see. I mean, we used to always ask people, we would meet different Gaudiya Mutt people, old men, myself and Tripurai Maharaj particularly, one day, and I don't know, Vishnu Raj, you may have been there, but we met one old disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta at the Bagh Bazaar. We went to Bagh Bazaar. And he was very nice and cordial and happy to see us, and we talked, and Tripurai Maharaj says, when you're going to the West? So he told, well, there's almost 1 billion people here in India, almost. You don't think there's any work here also? So we were young, we were thinking, really work is in America. Really work is in England. That's a little bit of our younger ego. Work to be done by Mahaprabhu is everywhere. It's right here in our own village. It's in our own state. It's in our own country. It's in foreign countries also. But what I've noticed nowadays is, because Prabhupada went to the West, right? All the preachers go to the West. Hardly any of the preachers of Krishna consciousness go around India. And I sometimes say this critically, they go to the West to make disciples of people who struggle their whole life to follow the four regular principles. And they neglect to preach to the people who live here in India who are born following the four regular principles. I mean, there are people here in this village, just this ordinary village here, who are probably never even drinking water outside of their own house. What to speak of non-veg or something else? Of course, there's a lot of non-veg and all that. But also, there are families and traditions that kept living a pure life, and they still haven't heard about Mahaprabhu. So I've noticed that many of the big world preachers, they spend the whole year going to the Malechadesh and preaching, because that's where the bucks are. That's where the money is. India's rich but tight, very tight. Money is very community-oriented. People give to their community gurus in India. by caste, by birth. But I've noticed, you know, they go outside, and I'm talking about the real devotees of Krishna. They will spend more time outside preaching to maleches who cannot hardly even follow basic principles of sub-religion, and they'll neglect preaching here in India. And probably now, there's more need of preaching in India than there is in the West. People are interested towards pure standards of living, environmental issues, spiritual issues, meditation. There's an inclination going this way. These things in India have become an embarrassment, a social embarrassment. A great section of the society in India is embarrassed to associate itself with its own culture. They dress, eat, think, and everything except drive like a Westerner. They drive like an Indian. Everything else, they go on Western. They just tell themselves, "I'm not an Indian. I'm not an Indian. I'm not an Indian. I don't." They want to be. They're called wannabes, and there are millions of them now. So, the reason I'm saying this is I had some plan to go to the West this year to get some bucks. But Krishna canceled all those plans and I'm not going anywhere. And I'm staying right here. But not without anything to do. We have much, much to do. And just to boast a little about our little ashram, by the grace of Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu and Radha Madhava and all our acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, Srila Puri Maharaj, and other Vaishnavas, we're actually quite accomplished at this little ashram. We, for as small as we are, we do quite a lot of activities and quite a lot of work at spreading Krishna consciousness, both locally and internationally. So I don't need to go and tell what each devotee does and who helps them. But the fact is, this little ashram and the people that are here and the people that some of them that aren't here that help this ashram, a tremendous amount of service to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gets done from this place. And that cannot be just by human endeavor. Not just because we have money. I know people with so much money that they can't get any service done. They can't even think of some service practice. But they have money. So money alone does not enable us to serve Krishna, serve Mahaprabhu. But it requires some blessing, some divine grace, some inspiration is necessary. And when that is there, we'll be able to serve, even if Lakshmi hasn't built her palace here yet. And funds and money and such might be in a little less. Still we'll be able to do things. But without the blessing of our acharyas, without the blessings of the Supreme Lord, even if we're kurupatis or multimillionaires, we won't be able to do much, much good. First thing is necessary is their blessing. Then service will follow. Not that we'll get money, then we'll do service, and then we'll offer that to them because they need it. No, they don't need it. The Lord doesn't need it. God doesn't need anything we do. The argument is there. People say, "Oh, I offer food to God. He doesn't need any food. God gave you the food." Yes, we say we're like His children. He likes to see us feed Him. But we feel, no. What do you say? He needs our food. Bhakti says, actually, He needs our food. He must eat. What if you're having a feast? You're eating, and then you're finished, you sit back, you're finished. Then your mother says, "Oh, I forgot to offer you the sweet." Then she offers you the sweet. Right? The same thing, when you're cooking, and the offering is made, and Krishna's plate is made, and the offering is made, and then somebody goes, "Oh, we forgot to offer the sweet." Well, then go offer it to him. He's there. Somebody take it and go back inside with the cup and give Krishna a sweet. If you were sitting at the table, isn't that what we would do? Huh? So don't think that Krishna is made of stone. He's just a stone and you place a ritual and after that, oh, time is over. What's the meaning? Well, then next time we forget to give you the sweet rice, we'll say, "Oh, never mind, time is over." You'll say, "Never mind the time, give the sweet rice." So devotees think of Krishna as something real, not something surreal, not something false. Something absolutely real. So, His blessings, the blessings of Srimati Radharani, the blessings of Mahaprabhu, Gaurinitai, all these things in our acharyas, they're necessary. So first we should try in our personal behavior, in our exercises, in our service, the things we do to please them in our life. Then we'll have success. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta, they knew for the holy name to spread all over the world, the service of Mayapur was essential. And they gave, and they went out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, in those days, the middle of nowhere. It took 2 days to get there, even by train. Now you get in 3 hours by car, but it took 2 days to get there by train, or 2 days to get there by boat. And it was just literally, it makes this look like a metropolis. You see, it was just out there in Bengal, off the Ganges, in just rice fields. There was nothing out there worth going out there for. In fact, it's dangerous. That's why it took 2 days to get there. Because you would reach there just at night, but you didn't dare cross the Ganges in the night, or the river pirates would rob you. It was a treacherous area, you see, because Maya had come all around, and Maya's agents, Ganges river pirates, dacoits, gundas, they were in plenty. But they knew this must be established according to the wish of the Supreme Lord first. And then the great good can be done to all the world. And they did it in that way. So we should understand what is to be done first and how to progress properly in our spiritual life. Not think that we would just jump to the final degree position when actually we have not finished the first course. We want to take the last course. And so many things follow that way of thinking. You understand? So this is a good day to remember that, the appearance of Mahaprabhu, everything by His grace. So we should sincerely pray for His grace. And if we're not telling prayer, actually, although you can tell prayer, and you can recite many prayers and slokas, giving the blessings of Mahaprabhu, even if you're not doing that, in your mind of minds, you should all remember. We should all remember. Everything by His grace, if we are to have any success in this world, only by His grace. Go, Prabhupada.
Yeah.